Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Your life, your country. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
Well, that was quick. You all see what Mexico did this week? Stopping tractor trailers with 800 migrants in two different trailers. A report on, I think even CNN had to run the report. So isn't it funny how tariffs, threat of tariffs, tough measures actually work? The U.S. has an enormous amount of power. Now, we don't need to throw around our power for no reason. That's not what we're all about, and that's not what we should be all about. But when our country is being systematically overrun across an 1,800-mile border to our south, we must do something about it. We know the Democrats are going to do nothing. In fact, they're exacerbating the situation. Pelosi and Schumer, neither would push their caucuses to reform the asylum laws, could do that in an afternoon, stop this madness with all these family units crossing. They won't do that. They won't fund basic necessities like shelter for illegal immigrants who have to be processed, including children, leading the United States government to house people at military bases with tents. They have nowhere to put them. I guess Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer would be fine with children being put in, I guess, released to unvetted sponsors. Is that what they want? Because I can see there will be a lot of people who would really love that, including sex traffickers. And meanwhile, Mexico is also vowing, after this come-to-Jesus moment they had with the Trump administration, to target human traffickers in their immigration crackdown. Now, this has to be more than just a temporary, you know, move by Mexico to get tough. This has to be a sustained effort. But it's certainly better than it was before. And the people who really deserve the blame here, other than Paul Ryan, who could have gotten this done in the first 100 days, are the Democrats who refuse to do what's the best thing for the country. If you want amnesty down the road, you're a Democrat. I don't agree with it, but I understand it. Okay? But you can't think this is good. Or do you? I mean, if you think this current situation is good, then you just have to admit that you basically want to replace America with a whole new country, because that's what's happening month by month. So Buttigieg's South Bend, Indiana has 100,000 people. That's how many people are in South Bend population. How many people came into the United States who were apprehended illegally in the month of May? 140,000. Does that give you a sense of where we are? Almost all of them released. We're on tap to have released more than a million people into the United States. And the best argument, the best thing I heard yesterday, well, look, the numbers under Donald Trump of border crossers are higher than they were in the last year of the Obama administration because of his tough rhetoric, meaning that the smugglers are telling everybody, you better come now because Donald Trump's going to clamp down. Oh, yeah. The reason the border is so porous is all because of Trump. That's a really neat trick they're trying to pull with that argument. If it's up to the Democrats, would have no walls, no fences, ICE would be abolished, and no one would ever be deported under the new Democrat Party. So let's just be clear on where we are in all this. We have a lot to get to on the show today. And, of course, the Trump kickoff rally in Orlando, exciting. And we're going to talk deportation, Trump's tweet about, well, we're going to be getting serious on sending people back from where they came. And he said, you know, a million or millions, which for a lot of us who believe that, you know, we have to do something, well, that's probably not easy to do. But I know back in the 1950s, Eisenhower deported, 80,000 people? And we had no technology, okay, to find people. So Jessica Vaughn's going to join us. We're going to talk to Victor Davis Hanson. Also, Gordon Chang is going to give us the very important information and analysis we need on where our country is vis-a-vis China. Now, a lot of people just roll their eyes like, oh, what can we do about China? Well, we're actually doing something about China. And there's a big meeting at the end of this month, next week, at the G20 with Trump and President Xi. What will materialize? Well, we'll see. But this is a big, big deal. Big deal. And the president sounding a little bit more optimistic about a deal. The market, as a result, goes up. People are more confident. But I promise you this, President Trump would really shock me if he agreed to a bad deal just to have a deal. That's just not, that's not who he is. Not after all this hard work on China. And I want to thank all of our sponsors, including GenuCell, Delta Animal Rescue, and Serovital. They help provide this podcast free for you every week. They're awesome. So make sure that that you help out our great partners, and you'll get great products. This was John Berman of CNN. Don't ask me why I forced myself to watch this tripe this morning, but listen very closely to what he says.
The president just announced a major anti-immigration operation, but no one at the White House can tell us if he meant to do that or if it's even real.
Okay, did you hear what he said?
The president just announced a major anti-immigration operation.
A major anti-immigration operation. No, that's not what it was. That's not what he tweeted. He's talking about removing people who've come into the country illegally, and I presume those who've been ordered deported by a federal immigration judge who refuse to leave. You've already been ordered deported, and you refuse to leave. So now he's going to draw out the Democrats, because they're going to have to come out in favor of people who've been ordered deported by the U.S. government have now a right to stay. Okay, so I think he's smoking the Democrats out on this issue. I think it's a brilliant idea. And by the way, the new agreement with Mexico means that every single person who crosses our border can be sent back to Mexico. Basically, every single person who claims asylum, wants asylum, they can all be sent back to Mexico. They have to wait there. So that has to start immediately. Immediately that has to start. And meanwhile, on MSNBC, a Princeton professor, Eddie Glau Jr., says it this way.
What Donald Trump did yesterday, what he announced via Twitter, and this may sound hyperbolic to some folk, it was a terroristic act. He's terrorizing families in communities who think that they're going to be snatched away from their kids, who have to walk around daily wondering whether or not an ICE agent is going to show up at work and snatch them.
You know what American workers have to worry about daily, depending on what business they're in? Whether the business down the road's all hiring illegals so they can outbid them, charge lower prices, and drive them out of business. That's what they worry about. A lot of people who don't have their sons, daughters, husbands, wives because of illegal immigrant crime. And a lot of children who are no longer with us in the United States, including immigrant kids, who've been brutalized at the hands of illegal immigrant criminals. But we never hear that outpouring of emotion from people like Eddie Glau Jr. when it comes to any of those victims. It is not a victimless crime.
He's announcing his campaign. Instead of calling people rapists, right, he's announcing his campaign by enacting terror on families who are often really close and productive members of communities around this country. It's horrifying.
I guess we're going to see whether the American people are welcoming a million people into the country illegally every year. I guess we're going to see whether Princeton is the rest of America.
Yeah, so does he just want ICE authorities to do nothing? Like, you should,
right.
Should commit crimes and come in the country illegally and then just feel totally fine.
Oh, no, 100%. They are just absolutely fine with all these people staying, unless maybe you committed multiple murders and then they'll kind of look the other way if you're deported. But even that, I mean, California, they allow people who committed horrific crimes to be released, not calling ICE, not calling the Department of Homeland Security, not alerting them, not holding them, releasing them for them to go on and commit murder. So, I don't know, frankly, what motivates them except raw power. Trump's doing stuff that he knows he's going to be hammered for in the elite class, and he does it anyway because he knows it's good for the country, whether it's the tariffs on China or the tariff threat on Mexico, which is yielding results, or, you know, his moves on, you know, illegal immigration in general. He knows that they're going to trash him, but he does it for the country. And for that, I will always be grateful for him.
You're telling people that we're going to arrest millions of people. Forget about just the logistics of picking them up.
Where are you going to house them? How are you going to feed them? You got to provide medical care for them. You have to provide treatment for women who, for example, might be giving birth when they're in some sort of federal holding facility. I think this is about the president saying we're going to conduct an operation. Maybe they pick up a few thousand people. This is about messaging. It's not actually about a security operation. There's no way you can pick up that number of people. No way.
A highly publicized operation could mean these pictures of ICE agents arresting parents with children. That's terrible politically for the president. Mm-hmm. And we know when the president threatens to build the wall and completely shut down the border, that's when we see a massive influx of migrants trying to get in before they can.
Joining us now is Jessica Vaughn, the Center for Immigration Studies. Jessica, they're going crazy after Trump's tweet, which, you know, it didn't have a lot of context to it. But I think he smokes out a lot of the Democrats and demonstrates to the American people just how far left they've gone.
Hi, yes, I agree with you. I had that same thought that this is kind of inviting a response or even baiting Democrats to come out and defend people who've been ordered removed just staying here. And also saying, look, you know, if you don't want this to happen, you need to give us the money that we need at the border to prevent them from getting here to begin with. I think they'll find some way to rationalize or at least try to rationalize their way out of it. But the American people can see exactly what's going on here. And of course, they think that these people never should have been let in to begin with. And now that they've had their day in court, and found removable, they should be sent home.
Jessica, how many individuals in this country have had adverse immigration rulings lodged against them and who are deportable aliens under the statute?
Believe it or not, there are about 1 million people in the country now who've been ordered removed by a judge. They've had their day in court. They lost. Were ordered home by an immigration judge, but are still here. Many of them are not removable because their home country won't take them back, but that's a pretty small share of this 1 million cases. And this is the docket that ICE is going to be drawing from and looking at and prioritizing to carry out the president's order to start, you know, holding people accountable.
That is a shock. Oh, my gosh. Well, again, we don't have the infrastructure in place or the laws in place to expeditiously process people. We don't have, we just don't have the, you know, the brick and mortar, the people, I mean, I was just down in Del Rio. The little Border Patrol facility there is just, it's busting at the seams. They got people in every holding room. They try to separate children from the children who came across, from the adults, from the Northern Triangle countries to the family units. There's simply not even enough rooms to hold them. I've never seen anything like it, Jessica. It is something out of a dystopian novel. And our Border Patrol are trying to do their very best and are extremely professional, knowing that these people are gaming the system because Congress has allowed them to game the system.
Yes, and this, it's no surprise that morale is very low among the Border Patrol right now because this of the situation they're being forced to deal with, and they are doing an admirable job under the circumstances, but it's tough for them. And it also shows why we should prevent this from happening, and it illustrates exactly why this agreement that the president has recently reached to get Mexico to head these people off before they even get anywhere near our border, and why the Remain in Mexico policy that prevents people from being allowed into the country and then released if they're asking for asylum, why all of these interlocking policies are so important. Because as soon as somebody steps onto U.S. soil and enters our dysfunctional immigration court system, it's game over.
Meanwhile, we have people on the left ramping up their own rhetoric, including Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is the energy, I think, in the core of the activist base of the party. And she said this.
The United States is running concentration camps on our southern border. And that is exactly what they are. They are concentration camps. And if that doesn't bother you, I don't We can have, okay, whatever. I want to talk to the people that are concerned enough with humanity to say that we should not, that never again means something. The fact that concentration camps are now an institutionalized practice in the home of the free is extraordinarily disturbing. And we need to do something about it.
Your reaction to that, now declaring that government shelters are concentration camps.
Oh, this is just preposterous, but it's also sad because, of course, they're not concentration camps. And that's an insult to the history of the real concentration camps. And anyone who is familiar with that history knows that this is nothing of the sort. But she's almost becoming a parody of herself. I mean, anyone could have predicted that that's where she would go, you know, to use that analogy. But it's sickening, and I don't think people buy it. She just looks hysterical and silly, frankly, for making that comparison. But again, I think it's insulting to the memories of the people who suffered in actual concentration camps.
Yeah, that's an understatement. And someone in the LA Times wrote this piece last week basically saying the same thing. And I thought to myself, wow, Congress, Pelosi and Schumer refused to fund the building of additional shelters, which has forced the government to put people in the military base because there's nowhere to put them. There's nowhere to house children except in these very expensive, several hundred dollar a night, privately run shelters that we don't have any money for. So they both want to complain about the situation, not do anything to reform the asylum laws that bring these people into the country, and they won't fund actual shelters. And then they call it a concentration camp. That's a neat trick.
Well, that's right. And the Trump administration actually implemented reforms to improve the places where people are held in custody and to make sure that kids who arrived here with smugglers, usually sent by their parents, would be held to make sure that they were not being released to abusive situations. No matter what the administration does on immigration, they're going to be criticized. The only thing that's acceptable to certain members of Congress is to just let everyone in, and everyone can see what's going on. They're not helping themselves politically by maintaining these positions. The Trump administration has to just keep going with what they're doing to try to solve the situation. The real battle here is going to take place over the appropriations bills in the coming weeks, because the Democrats know that if they starve the Trump administration and the immigration agencies of money, that it's harder for them to enforce the laws. And that's their kind of backdoor way of clamping down on enforcement and preventing it. And that's going to be a problem for so many communities to not have these laws enforced.
Jessica Vaughn, thank you for your analysis and the work you've done for so long as the Director for Policy Studies for the Center for Immigration Studies. Incredibly valuable resource for everybody across this country. Otherwise, you'll just hear the complete and utter distortions, misrepresentations, and lies. Like, the President Trump is enacting an operation against immigration. Okay, no, he's actually reformed the legal immigration system to be more merit-based, which is a great thing. And, I mean, if anything, he's been too liberal on immigration, like illegal immigration, for a lot of immigration hawks like myself. I'd rather have cut back legal immigration and illegal immigration till we got a handle on who's in the country illegally. But, you know, I'm not president, so he does what he does. By the way, on Twitter, I have a poll. Should the president live tweet the Democrat debates, or let them feed on each other? So that's my Twitter poll. So go to Twitter, follow me at Ingram Angle if you already haven't done that. And you all know I love my two dogs. Love, love, love. They're a pain in the neck sometimes, but I do love them. And all animals deserve a life of love and dignity and happiness. But what about our furry friends who are abandoned? They're lost or they don't have a place to go. Where do they go? Well, Delta Rescue is the largest no-kill, care-for-life animal sanctuary on the planet. Okay. And their super sanctuary is home to more than 1,500 animals who've all been abandoned in the wilderness. And you can keep this beautiful mountaintop ranch continuing to fulfill its mission of compassion by including Delta Rescue in your estate plans. 100% of your donations go directly to the animals of the Delta Rescue Super Sanctuary. For more information on Delta Rescue and how to put them in your estate plan, just go to deltarescue.org/Laura. That's deltarescue.org/Laura. Learn more about the great benefits of your estate contribution. Donate today at deltarescue.org/Laura.
Prepare to get stunned. The Steve Austin Show is back and better than ever.
And I've been kicking his ass, kicked out of the pile driver. You, it's time to go home.
With new exciting episodes featuring tales from his new life, unbelievable past interviews, and talks to pro wrestling pals, you name it, Steve's on it.
You're a hell of a damn wrestler.
Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
It was a crime no one expected, and one many can't forget. 22 Hours, An American Nightmare. A new podcast from WTOP News and Podcast One details the heinous murders of a D.C. power couple, their 10-year-old son, and housekeeper inside their own home. The chilling messages from the victims being held hostage.
Hey, Nelly, it's Saba.
The complicated trail of evidence and shocking moments from the trial.
She thinks she knows how Darren Wint got inside the house.
His defense team drops a bombshell.
Will this investigation lead to the release of confidential audio recordings from the case?
So it's under general counsel review. I mean, I'm committing to making a transparent court.
22 Hours, An American Nightmare. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts today.
This week, children, immigrant children were moved to the same internment camps where the Japanese were held in the earlier 20th century. And this is not even about a crisis.
Well, this is about sheer and utter ignorance. And when you start comparing U.S. temporary housing facilities where people are given 3 meals a day, medical care, entertainment, and bilingual services to internment camps or concentration camps, as she has also said, then you know we're in big trouble. That was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So if you're comparing the Trump administration to the Nazi regime, then you've already lost the argument. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. But it also shows the lack of intellectual heft on the part of the Democrats. They just don't have anything. All they have is the alarmism. All they have is the identity politics and freebie dangling, which is what they're doing with college tuitions free, universal pre-K free, guaranteed job, guaranteed standard of living. And just like you're seeing in Europe, you eventually run out of other people's money. Joining us now, delighted he's with us, Victor Davis Hanson from the Hoover Institution and author of the just released The Case for Trump, just released in the spring. VDH, whenever I start hearing them comparing Trump or his policies to Nazi Germany, I really feel like, you know, they've just lost any credibility, any shred of credibility that they may have had.
Yeah, I think everybody realizes that once you invoke Hitler, you've lost any argument. You know, what's weird about this whole thing is that the United States is actually getting into a really good position vis-a-vis finally on immigration, because Trump has sat back and watched this thing. He's tried to shut down the government. He's tried to raise tariffs. He's done about all he can do without any help from the Democrats and with them actually undermining U.S. immigration law. You see these huge influxes. And so he's now going to, he's showing the world and the Western public, even in Europe, is getting sick of this in their own countries. I just got back from Greece and they just thrown out the socialists because of the same issue. And I think what he's setting a stage for, he's saying to Mexico and Central America, for you Central American governments, there's no reason why you have to have 30 billion more in remittances, or Mexico, 35 billion, or $71 billion trade surplus. He has a lot more bullets in his gun. He can start taxing remittances. He can go back to tariffs. He can cut off foreign aid. And they know that. And their only hope is to undermine the U.S. through opposition parties in the U.S. And Trump's, I think all he has to do is just say to these governments, there's going to be a lot of bad times coming down the pipeline for you if you don't change. And as long as he doesn't panic, he gets this hysterical response out of Mexico and the Central American governments and out of people like Cortez, Ocasio-Cortez, because they know they're in a dilemma. No nation could ever endure long with this present mess on the border. They're deliberately trying to undermine the U.S. sovereignty and the economy, our political system, and our demographic reality. We know that. And if we let it happen, we don't exist anymore. So we have no choice, but the cards are all in our hands.
I said this earlier, Victor, that when you really start thinking about the sheer number of people, okay, Pete Buttigieg, who's like the new thing in the Democrat Party, okay, mayor of South Bend, Indiana. South Bend has a population of 100,000 people. 140,000 people who are illegals or fake asylum applicants crossed our border in the month of May, alone in the month of May, and they were virtually all of them were released into the country. So more than the entire population of Pete Buttigieg's hometown released into the country over and over and over again. Yet, Victor, this is what he said, and this is who he gave the blame to.
We got a president who got elected on a promise to fix immigration, whatever that meant to him. And what we've seen is that all of the issues that were with us then are with us now, and issues at the border, including a humanitarian crisis created by this president through cruel policies like family separation, are only getting worse. If immigration were solved, if we had comprehensive reform, this administration could claim it as an achievement. But it's more useful to them as a crisis, unsolved, than it would be as an achievement if they actually did something.
That's the new line. They're trying this out. I've heard it on MSNBC and CNN that immigration is going to be Donald Trump's one of his big failures that they're going to be able to look to. Do they have any credibility on that?
No, he's kind of a glib moron. He really is, because there's no public support for open borders. And the issue is already tilting more in Trump's direction, because everybody knows what comprehensive immigration reform means when he voices that. It means basically a blanket amnesty and then about 500 to a million of people allowed to come in from across the southern border per year. And again, if Trump can just not panic and let the optics work out and try to address this problem and say to the country, we're not going to be a country any longer, I think it's a winning issue.
All right, Victor, we really appreciate your joining us. We got a little hiccuping in the audio there, but we'll have you back soon. And Victor Davis Hanson here on the Laura Ingraham podcast for a quick hit. We'll have him back longer later on in the week, and certainly on the Ingraham angle. I think the point that we made today, and we'll get Gordon Chang on to talk about the China syndrome. The point that has been made today is a profound one, that Donald Trump has smoked out the Democrats. No longer can they claim to be for border enforcement or, oh, yeah, we're for enforcing the border. Oh, yeah, we're for, we're for keeping the country safe. And, oh, yeah, we're not for illegal immigration. We're for legal immigration. That's what they used to say. That's what the Obama folks and the Clinton folks used to say, but no longer. They are now exposed as a completely open borders oriented party. They value the benefits that illegal immigrants will get over the value of a sovereign, independent, and free nation that is well within its sovereign right to enforce her borders. So they value those illegal immigrants more than, frankly, they value your opinion. No American wants open borders. They don't want open borders. Recent immigrants don't want open borders. But that is essentially what we have now, because we refuse to enforce these laws. So now, I mean, Trump can make a very credible argument that his presidency has demonstrated the truth of the scenario vis-a-vis Democrats and immigration. There is no distinction between legal and illegal. You heard that in that John Berman CNN host clip where he conflates the two, illegal and legal. And now the curtain is pulled back fully. And I think that's a value. That's something that is a value. So now they can't hide behind these old, you know, bumper sticker slogans of, you know, we're for legal immigration. No, you're for replacing the current American population or swamping the current American population with a new population of people who are perhaps more hospitable to socialist ideals. Perhaps they're more hospitable to big government. Perhaps they want more across the board social spending. They want Spanish to be at least on par with English as a national language. I mean, pick your issue. But that's what they're hoping for. They can't risk a situation where a guy like Trump keeps getting elected. I mean, they tried to knock him out with the stupid Russia investigation and that backfired, but they can't risk that again. So they have to have a new electorate. And the new electorate, they think, will be new immigrants who are just not in tune, at least in this current going through this current public schools situation that we have. They're not in tune with the American founding or even taught to love the American founding. I mean, if you go through public schools today and even most private schools, you're taught that America is just kind of a racist place that had a lot of racist people and did a lot of racist things. And the good stuff is that America might have done is kind of in spite of its evil founding. That's what these people believe. That's why every time there's a statue in the South vandalized, as there was another Confederate statue vandalized in Tennessee this week, you should see the comments on Twitter. Can I buy you more paint? Oh, we should have a GoFundMe page for whoever did this. Good for them. You know, the truth. Knock it down. Put a rope around its neck. I mean, this is the mentality of people we're dealing with. And they've come out of public schools and really high-priced universities, and this is the cool way to think. And so you're bringing new immigrants who came here undocumented into this education system, which sadly is in the sewer in many ways. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham podcast. I have to ask you, you know, some of you are experiencing some, I mean, dips in your energy, or you even you're sleeping. You don't feel like your skin looks as great as it can. Well, a major cause of the way you feel is a decline in your body's production of human growth hormone, or HGH. And here's the good news. Cerovital is clinically shown to increase your body's natural production of HGH to levels that are closer to what you experience in your 20s and 30s. And their newest scientific breakthrough, Cerovital Advanced, well, that delivers all the benefits of the original formula plus accelerated skin improvements and weight loss in as little as 15 days. And not only that, users experience more energy, improved mood, better sleep, reduced cravings. All this and no added hormones or harmful chemicals. Listeners to the Laura Ingraham podcast get 20% off their order at cerovital.com when they use the promo code Laura. That's 20% off your purchase at cerovital.com. That's S-E-R-O-V-I-T-A-L when you use the promo code Laura. And remember, that's L-A-U-R-A. Cerovital.com, promo code L-A-U-R-A.
China is going to eat our lunch? Come on, man. They can't even figure out how to deal with the fact that they have this great division between the China Sea and the mountains in the east, I mean, in the west. They can't figure out how they're going to deal with the corruption that exists within the system. I mean, they're not bad folks, but guess what? They're not competition for us.
Joe Biden thought that China was not a competitor of ours. Joe Biden is a dummy. Joe Biden thought China was not a competitor. China made $500 billion over a short period of time against Obama, Biden, and for many, many years, in all fairness to them. China is a major competitor, and right now China wants to make a deal very badly. It's me right now that's holding up the deal. And we're going to either do a great deal with China or we're not doing a deal at all. Right now, China is paying us billions and billions of dollars. They never gave us 10 cents. And China ate our country alive during Obama and Biden. And it's a shame.
You're listening to the Laura Ingraham podcast. Delighted you were with us. Lots of news, including on the immigration front and Donald Trump announcing via tweet there will now be an extended bilateral meeting with Chinese officials at the G20 in Tokyo at the end of this month. That sent stocks rallying and optimism soaring. But my point all along has been that tariffs are better than a bad deal. I don't believe Trump would agree to a bad deal. I certainly know his U.S. Trade Representative Bob Lighthizer would argue against that. But if it's a good deal, and if we could get real, meaningful, verifiable, prosecutable assurances that China would stop ripping us off, our IP, our technology, forced technology transfers, all of that, perhaps there's something we can do. But remember, we thought we'd have a deal with North Korea, and that never panned out. So I'd caution everyone against trying to be, you know, all, you know, way over the moon about this. We have no idea. But this is a tweet from President Trump. And a lot of people were thinking, and I know from my sources in the administration, that it was unwise to actually have a bilateral meeting with China, given the relative lack of progress with Chinese officials on these key issues. So Lord knows what's happened between the time I talked to those officials and today. Joining us now on this and so much else is Gordon Chang. He's a Fox News contributor, author of Nuclear Showdown and Coming Collapse of China. He joins us now. Gordon, good to talk to you. I'm always skeptical about these announced meetings with Xi, and maybe it's my deep-seated distrust of the Chinese. But I think any deal with the Chinese would have to be, I mean, it would have to be groundbreaking, but there's no doubt that these tariffs have done enormous damage to China. Enormous.
You're certainly right about that, Laura. The numbers for last month point to an economy in China that is either zero growth or even contracting. What was really stunning was an 8.5% decline in imports year to year, showing very weak domestic demand. Also, bellwether car sales were down 16.4%. That is the worst monthly drop ever, and it's the 11th straight month of decline in car sales. So clearly, President Trump's tariffs, along with structural problems in that Xi Jinping's model of economy, have really worked together to put China in a very weak position.
Well, the hundreds of billions of dollars worth of goods that are subjected to now U.S. tariffs on the Chinese side are substantial. On the U.S. side, they're set on things like soybeans, which have hurt the farmers. Some farmers themselves are, many of them get already big government subsidies. They were going to get some help anyway from the administration as a result of these tariffs. But, you know, the big red flag went up yesterday. I saw some press report, Gordon, about, okay, well, the big container ships are on the way from China to the United States, and you could pay more for those Hasbro toys at Christmas and the clothes that are for Target. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, if the choice is between an $11.99 pair of pants and buying three of them versus buying two pair of pants, and you save the country, maybe we should just reorient the way we spend our money. I mean, I'm sorry, well, sure, but I found that to be a ridiculous report yesterday.
It is a ridiculous argument, especially because right now, because of the tariffs and because of other factors, American companies are disengaging from China. They're taking their factories out of the country, putting them elsewhere. We saw that with Google. Nintendo, the Japanese game company, is taking the production of their one of their Switch game consoles out of China. And there's so many other stories of companies that have decided to reduce their vulnerability to Chinese retaliation. So even if you pay more in the short term, clearly in the long term, we're going to have factories not in China, and the costs are going to be pretty much the same as they are from Chinese factories. And by the way, Laura, some of those factories are going to go to Central America. They're going to stabilize those communities there, which means we're not going to have those big caravans pushing up on our southern border. This is win-win-win for the United States.
Yeah, and again, who knows what will happen in this meeting. Again, I don't trust the Chinese farther than I can throw them on any issue. I just don't. It's a communist regime. What they do to Christians, how they treated pregnant women, what they do to the Muslim Uyghurs. I don't trust them. I don't believe their assurances. But there is an enormous amount of pressure on this administration at the same time to make a deal with China. The Wall Street wants a deal. They want to continue to do their big IPOs in China. They're not all that worried about, you know, the space race or intellectual property or AI, artificial intelligence. They're not really concerned about that. So what position does this leave the president in?
Well, I think the president's actually in a very good position because there's also political factors on both sides of the Pacific that argue against the deal. You know, all the things that you just mentioned, those are critically important, and people in the United States across the political spectrum understand that. And I do believe that President Trump will stand resolute on these issues. I don't think the president will make a bad deal because he understands that the Chinese will dishonor it right away. And when they do, that's on him. And I don't think he wants to be held responsible for Chinese actions. And also the Chinese right now have published their conditions for a deal, which make any sort of agreement unlikely. Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler, is raising all of these xenophobic themes. And that makes it extremely unlikely that there will be an agreement in the short term.
Well, and again, we have to think about this in, not in terms of how this affects the U.S. market over the next, you know, 6 months or next month, but how this affects America over the next decade plus. And I think in this world of instantaneous reaction, Gordon, from the commentary on this issue to the writing on this issue, there are very few people. I mean, Mike Pillsbury, you, and just a few others seem to have predicted this, a turn for China, and the normal trade relations that China received the status back, you know, 20 plus years ago. We finally have some other people signing on to your belief that this was a mistake. I mean, we had a big piece in The Atlantic I tweeted out yesterday. People now admitting it was a mistake to allow them in without clear assurances that China's system would be, you know, would be workable within a truly free market.
Yeah, in 2001, when China joined the World Trade Organization, there was a hope that by joining, that China would enmesh itself in the global rules. And clearly it hasn't. It's gone the other way. And Laura, you're absolutely right. When you have the theft of U.S. intellectual property in the hundreds of billions of dollars a year, perhaps as much as $600 billion, that's a grievous wound that we've got to do something about. And at the same time, China's trade behavior has deteriorated, is not complying with its promises, and is being very open about its noncompliance. So they're leaving us no choice in this matter. And it's really important that you talk about these things because right now the Chinese are continuing a decades-long trade war against us. And by the way, it's not just a trade war. It's not just an economic war. They talk about people's war against the U.S. They raised that in the middle of last month, and that means the U.S., in their view, is the enemy.
We're talking to Gordon Chang here on the Laura Ingraham podcast.
Hong Kong protesters there taking to the streets in historic numbers are demanding the resignation of its embattled leader.
It's a serious groundswell against Chinese rule here. People are worried this proposed extradition law will target political critics who could then be sent to the mainland and be pulled into China's judicial system. And so yesterday, that sea of people in the streets, most of them wearing black, a few hundred of them still here today. It's putting a lot of pressure on Hong Kong's leader, Carrie Lam, who said she would delay passing that law. She even apologized. But protesters saying it's all too little too late. And they've added her resignation to their list of demands.
The massive demonstrations, I look today, and that really is a million people. A lot of times people talk about they had 2,000 people, but it was really 1,000 or it was 200. I see it all the time. I see it all the time. But when you look at this demonstration, they said it was a million people. That was a million people. That was as big a demonstration as I've ever seen. So I hope it all works out for China and for Hong Kong. I understand the reason for the demonstration, but I'm sure they'll be able to work it out. I hope they're going to be able to work it out with China.
What about these protests in Hong Kong? I think they're the largest protests that the world has seen in, I don't know, maybe ever. I mean, 2.2 million people in the streets against this new law requiring extradition of certain criminals to China. And we know what happens to criminals in China or people who are accused of crimes.
Yes. And It was about 2 million people on the streets on Sunday. That followed a million people the Sunday before. And Carrie Lam, the chief executive of Hong Kong, the top political officer, has backed down on that, but she has not withdrawn the bill, and that's the important thing. Also, the crowds are now demanding that she resign. And by the way, Laura, there is evidence that China's People's Liberation Army is now on the streets in Hong Kong. What they are doing is they're on the streets in the uniforms of the Hong Kong police. There are videos which show protesters talking to these policemen, quote-unquote, and they don't seem to understand Cantonese, which is the language of Hong Kong. They're not showing their Hong Kong police identity cards. And clearly, we now have a situation where China has put its forces into the streets.
And they know that Hong Kong or Taiwan, which they also have their eyes on, you know, Hong Kong is already theirs. But if they can tighten the grip, that's a message to the rest of the world. And Taiwan, I mean, I just don't have a lot of faith that the U.S. would even be able to do much to save Taiwan today, despite our defense pact with Taiwan.
Yeah, right now the Chinese People's Liberation Army is expanding fast, and it's configuring itself to invade Taiwan. The United States still has the power to prevent China from doing that. And one of the things that we can do to avoid the Chinese even thinking about invading is a clear declaration from Washington that we will defend Taiwan. We do that, the Chinese won't try it. We did not issue a clear declaration that Kim Il-sung, the North Korean leader, could not invade South Korea in 1950. He went ahead and did it anyway. There was no clear declaration to Saddam Hussein that he could not invade Kuwait, so he did it anyway. So we have the power, just with words, to prevent invasions and to maintain peace and stability.
We're talking to Gordon Chang here on the Laura Ingraham podcast. And meanwhile, Huawei, this is a huge, huge issue, expecting 30, this is what I also think moved the Chinese perhaps, expects a $30 billion revenue hit from the U.S. clampdown. And that's the power of the U.S. consumer. That's why do we give it away? Tell us what the posture toward Huawei has meant for our posture against China in general.
The administration's actions against Huawei last month, and there were two of them, there was an emergency presidential order against foreign adversaries supplying telecom equipment. There was also the Commerce Department's adding Huawei to the entity list, which requires U.S. businesses to obtain licenses before doing any sort of arrangement with Huawei. Those two things are what's responsible for a number of really adverse developments for Huawei, which essentially is a Chinese state-owned company. Although it says it's employee-owned, it's actually 99% state-owned. This is what's responsible for Huawei's projections of big revenue falls, and also for Huawei delaying the introduction of their new laptop and some other stuff that they were going to introduce to the market. We have the ability to put Huawei technologies under. We need to do this because it's a threat to not only our security, but the security of everybody else. I hope the president stays the course on Huawei and doesn't let up. Remember last year, Laura, you were very firm when President Trump let up on ZTE, which is another Chinese telecom equipment manufacturer. That was a mistake on their part of administration. I hope they don't make it with regard same mistake with regard to Huawei.
No, it's a huge plus for the U.S. government to be strong, aggressive, and robust in its exchanges with China and its interactions with China. And this is just the most recent example of why it's working. And I will say this, I'll continue to say this. Tariffs on products are always going to be better than a bad deal. It's just better. I mean, it weakens China. We'll have to have some adjustments here at home. We might even lose some money, but not what would lose if we allowed this to continue the way it's been continuing. So tariffs, I'm happy to have tariffs as long as it means not having a bad deal.
Absolutely. 100%, Laura, you're absolutely right, because we are not understanding the real losses that we are currently suffering because of China's actions against the United States. Intellectual property theft, violations of its trade agreements, all sorts of other things. And by the way, Laura, China has injured American servicemen last year in an Air Force C-130. They have been injuring our diplomats at the Guangzhou consulate, causing brain injuries with their sonic attacks. We should not maintain cordial relations. We should not maintain trading relations with any country harming Americans.
Well, again, this is what Reagan's posture was with the Soviet Union, and it worked pretty well. The problem is we allowed our economy to become so intertwined with the Chinese economy over the last 20-plus years. It was a huge mistake. And now I think it is good that some of these companies are pulling out and they're going to other countries. And some of them aren't, you know, they're not great, but they're not China, right? So we got Malaysia and Vietnam, and you know they're benefiting from some of China's excesses as well.
Yes, and some of these countries are our friends, but at least they're not injuring Americans. They're not declaring war on the U.S. as China just did in the middle of last month. So it's a win for the United States when factories leave China, and they're doing that, and this is an important development. And I think that this is really President Trump's plan all along, to reduce American vulnerability to Chinese retaliation.
Gordon Chang, thank you so much. Here on the Laura Ingraham Podcast, always good to talk to you. I want to thank all of our sponsors supporting the show, Genucel, Delta Animal Rescue, and Cerovital. They're fabulous. And just always, always remember, America now and forever, the Laura Ingraham Podcast. See you next time.
Hey there, Rob Cesternino from Rob as a Podcast, and if you're a Big Brother fan, you know the summer is all about one thing, watching crazy people locked in a house on Big Brother, and we've got episode recaps after every episode with the past house guests talking about all the updates from the game and the gossip from the live feed. Listen to Rob as a Podcast exclusively on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One, and if you love the show, why don't you share it or even leave us a rating and review?